This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. American Beauty has been named Best Film of the Year by the National Board of Review of Motion Pictures. The film won the Los Angeles Film Critics Association Best Director Award. American Beauty is also on Time Magazine's Top 10 list. My guest is the screenwriter, Alan Ball. It's his first produced screenplay, but he's had several years' experience writing for sitcoms. He's the creator and executive producer of the current sitcom, Oh, Grow Up. American Beauty revolves around two suburban families, and it's about alienation and loneliness and the ability to find beauty in the ordinary. Kevin Spacey plays Lester Burnham, a man who barely communicates with his wife, Carolyn, played by Annette Bening, has lost touch with his teenage daughter, Janie, and detests his job at an advertising magazine. In this scene, he's at the dinner table when he announces that he's made a big change in his life.
Janie, today I quit my job. Just pass the asparagus.
Your father seems to think this kind of behavior is something to be proud of.
And your mother seems to prefer that I go through life like a f***ing prisoner while she keeps my in a mason jar under the sink.
How dare you speak to me that way in front of her? And I marvel that you can be so contemptuous of me on the same day that you lose your job.
Lose it. I didn't lose it. It's not like, whoops, where'd my job go? I quit. Someone passed me the asparagus.
Oh, and I want to thank you for putting me under the added pressure of being the sole breadwinner now.
I already have a job.
No, don't give a second thought as to who's going to pay the mortgage. We'll just leave it all up to Carolyn. You mean you're going to take care of everything now, Carolyn? Yes, I don't mind. I really don't. You mean everything? You don't mind having the sole responsibility? Your husband feels he can just quit his job and you don't...
Will someone please pass me the asparagus?
I'm not going to be a part of this.
Sit down! I am sick and tired of being treated like I don't exist. You two do whatever you want to do, whenever you want to do it, and I don't complain. All I want
is
the same...
Oh, you don't complain? Oh, please, excuse me. I must be psychotic then. If you don't complain, what is this? Yeah, let's bring in the laugh meter and see how loud it gets on that one. You don't complain.
Don't interrupt me, honey.
Now, are there publicists and stuff doing an Academy Award push now?
Yes, that's all underway, and that's very interesting to me because, you know, I had never even... it's just a whole new world, and so there's a whole strategy and all kinds of things like that, and it's quite interesting.
Tell us what you can about that, about the politics and the strategy.
Well, you know, it's a big deal. It's a big deal within the industry. And, for my own self, I've been signing scripts to send to all these various places. And I've been asked to appear on certain panels and screenwriting things and that sort of thing. And I'm happy to do it because, I have sort of a real outsider mentality, like who sort of just all of a sudden lucked into, you know, being in the middle of this. And also I have a tendency to believe that the conventional wisdom of the way you approach screenwriting is not necessarily the best. So whenever I'm invited to go to those things and talk to aspiring screenwriters, I'm always happy to, because I wish somebody had, you know, said to me when I was, younger and struggling, you know, the traditional three-act structure is not the only valid way to write a screenplay.
And how do you think American Beauty deviates from that three-act structure?
Well, it doesn't deviate entirely. I mean, there are three acts, but it fools around with structure a little bit. And there's also not a very... I mean, I guess you could say Lester is the protagonist, but he's, you know, he's not a very... I mean, he certainly does a lot of things that you're not rooting for. I think it's a little more morally ambiguous. I think it goes into deeper territory. I think it's ultimately, hopefully, touches on subjects that you wouldn't necessarily see in the latest Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
The Kevin Spacey character works for an advertising magazine. Now, I know you worked for an advertising and a public relations magazine. What kind of work did you do for those magazines?
I was an art director. I was not a writer. I was an art director. I worked in the art department. I designed infographics in which I took meaningless information and made it look visually appealing.
What's meaningless information?
Oh, you know, just statistics. Just page after page after page of statistics about who watches what and who reads what. And it was my job to do to turn it into, you know, clever little illustrated charts and graphs.
Well, Kevin Spacey writes this great quitting letter to his boss. It's really nasty.
Mm-hmm.
Can you paraphrase the letter for us?
I think the letter is, my job consists mostly of masking my contempt for the people in charge and at least once a day retiring to the men's room where I walk off while I fantasize about a life that doesn't so closely resemble hell.
Did you think of writing letters like that when you were working?
You know what? All the anger of Kevin's character doesn't come from my time at the magazine, because that was actually a fairly, you know, it was, as day jobs go, it was about as good as it could get. It actually comes from my own anger at, I was a playwright living in New York. I was producing work that I really cared about, not making a cent for it, but really being invested and passionate in it and loving it and directing it and even sometimes acting in it. And then I wrote a play, and I was offered a job to come out to Los Angeles and write for television. My first 4 years in TV were in situations that, to a writer, to somebody who needs his work to be meaningful, even if only to himself. I was working in situations where that was really not possible, and I was so creatively frustrated and angry at certain aspects of the, just the nature of the work that I was doing, that's who Lester's writing that letter to.
And were these sitcoms that you were writing?
Yes.
Do you want to say which ones?
No, I'd rather not.
Right.
But they were situation comedies that were that totally revolved around the star of the show, and in each instance, the star of the show had total creative control, and that's very frustrating as a writer, because you become a stenographer, and when you're taking dictation from someone who really doesn't think like a writer or think like who basically looks at the show as PR for their own lives. There's a certain amount of frustration and rage that builds up in you, and you know, at the time I was really frustrated, but you know, in retrospect, thank God, because it fueled the writing of American Beauty.
You know what I thought was really funny? You know, when Spacey quits the job, he ends up taking a job at a fast food hamburger place.
Right.
And he says he's looking for the least amount of responsibility. I have to say, I so related to that. I would never do this, and nor would I want to work in a fast food hamburger joint, and especially for the amount of money that they pay. But
right.
There are days, you know, when I wake up, and I'm sure lots of people do, and think, is there a way of going through life with a little less responsibility?
Oh, totally. I know. And you just want to, yeah, that's, yeah. I relate to that every day, believe me.
and is it more so now that you're so successful with American Beauty?
Yeah, and you know, I'm what I'm doing now is I'm executive producing a television show, which is a tremendous amount of responsibility, more responsibility than I've ever had in my life. And while I love it, there are certainly days when I wake up and I think, yeah, I wouldn't mind flipping burgers today. I don't want to go in and face this, but you know. Wishing to do something and actually doing it are two different things.
My guest is Alan Ball. He wrote the screenplay for American Beauty. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Alan Ball is my guest, and he wrote the screenplay for American Beauty, and he's also the creator of the sitcom Oh, Grow Up. The Kevin Spacey character gets a crush on his daughter's best friend, who, like his daughter, is still in high school. And it starts off kind of funny in the beginning and gets, you know, increasingly disturbing as the story goes on. And, you know, not being a guy myself, I wonder, do you think that this is an emotion that a lot of adult men end up having to deal with and repress? These feelings of arousal for... you know, lovely teenagers who are their children's friends.
I think for Lester, he hasn't felt that way about any woman in a long time. And she reawakens a part of him that takes him back to when he was a teenager himself. And he basically had that sort of optimism and that sort of kind of energy that you feel when basically your whole life is ahead of you, as opposed to most of your life is behind you. Not most, but at least, you know, half of your life is behind you. You're at a point where you think anything is possible, as opposed to a point where you think, well, how can I, what kind of compromise can I hope to settle for? And while his obsession with her may not be healthy or appropriate, I feel like his desire to have the, to feel that kind of passion in life again is very, very healthy. And he gets confused because he thinks that she's the goal, but she's really just, in sort of Jungian terms, she's just the knock on the door. She's just the call to adventure. And he realizes that, of course, by the end.
In American Beauty, the teenage guy in the film observes life through his video camera. He's just obsessive about videotaping the world around him, particularly anything that strikes him as beautiful. And the video both preserves the moment of beauty, but it also frames it as it's happening.
Right.
Some people may think that seeing the world through a camera distances you from what you're seeing, but it seems to connect him with the world. Has writing ever been like that for you? Has it been either distancing or something that connects you?
Yeah, exactly. It's been both. And I think, you know, if anybody were to analyze me, they'd say that's what his camera represents is writing for me. But he says a very interesting thing in the scene where he shows her the video of the plastic bag. He says, video is a poor excuse, I know, but it helps me remember. And it's not the video itself. It's the moment, and he wants to preserve the moment, but he knows that the video of the moment is not the moment. That's a very subtle distinction that may get lost in some people, but I think that's an important part of his character.
Do you ever think that if you didn't write something down, you'd be left with virtually no memory of it, no way of retrieving it?
I don't think that I think there'd be no memory of it, but there are certain times when I feel sort of like whatever that gateway to your subconscious is open. It's like, I got to do this now or I'm never going to be able to see the clarity of this moment as clearly as I see it now.
This videotape that you mentioned is a videotape that the character takes of what he considers to be the most beautiful thing he's ever seen, which is basically a trash bag being blown in circles by the wind on an autumn day, and there's leaves blowing around too. Why did you come up with that image as the most beautiful thing?
Because I had an encounter with a plastic bag in the wind outside the World Trade Center one day that was sort of, you know, it was sort of an epiphany, and very similar to what he experienced in you know, I'm sure a lot of people would look at that and say, well, that's completely insane. And maybe it is, but I don't feel like I chose that image. I kind of feel like it chose me.
What was so beautiful about it to you?
I don't know. First of all, it was so real. It wasn't artificial. It wasn't a beautifully composed painting or a beautifully airbrushed photograph or this perfect image. You know, it was nature. And plus
nature and junk.
Yeah, exactly. And literally, this bag circled me. It just kept circling me. And I'm sure it's just a coincidence, but it really, there was something profound in that moment for me. And I've never forgotten that moment. And it kind of like brought me to tears. And I can't remember exactly what I was going through in my own life at that time. I might have been one of those moments where, you know, watching a Burger King commercial would have brought me to tears.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was a profound moment, and it always stuck with me. And you know, there's a whole Buddhist notion of the miraculous within the mundane, and that's why I thought it was important that there is beauty in a piece of garbage flying through the wind. And I went, actually, when the movie opened in Toronto and I went up there for the press junket, there was somebody who said, I want to talk to you about that moment. I went, okay. And they went, he says it's beautiful, but it's garbage. And I said, yeah. He said, well, garbage isn't beautiful. And I went, oh, well, you know, I guess it's a question of perspective. That's kind of the point. He went, no, garbage is not beautiful. And I sort of went, okay. Thanks for clearing that up for me.
Did you go with the director, Sam Mendes, when that sequence was being shot and And
no, and I keep asking him how he shot that. And
yeah, because you have to wait for that perfect moment where that bag really is kind of poetry in motion.
He's very mysterious about how he got it. But, you know, I think it's because it's probably very, you know, mundane. There are probably like four people off camera with leaf blowers, you know.
Right.
But but he says, no, I don't want to tell you how I got that.
Oh, well, eventually you'll get it out of him.
Yeah.
Do you feel that there was anything that you were able to do in American Beauty that you maybe wouldn't have been able to do if you were working with, say, a more experienced director or a production company that had already made a lot of movies? Because you were all first-timers and, I guess, all willing to take chances.
Yeah, and I also think the budget of our movie was so small that that no one cared.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if it had been... I mean, there was a point where there were a couple of big A-list directors reading the script, and that made me very nervous because I knew that if they signed on and then they started getting big, big movie stars on and the budget crept upwards, then everybody would get really upset about them, you know, really nervous about the material. And, well, can't, you know, it's so gross for him to be obsessed with a teenager. Can't they be college students? Can't they, or in their mid-20s? And, you know, can't Lester and Carolyn be better parents to their children? Because they're just so unlikable. And, you know, those kinds of studio notes that you get all the time. And we were very lucky because we were very low budget, by mainstream standards. And we just sort of, like, floated under the radar there.
If I were writing a movie, I would sure want Kevin Spacey to be reading lines that I'd written.
just when we had the first read-through, just sitting at the table and hearing him read, you know, I went up to him afterwards. I said, well, that was one of the great joys of my life. Thank you.
What did he do with your lines that perhaps made you hear what you had written differently than you'd heard it in your own head?
Well, interestingly enough, a lot of what he did with them was exactly what I heard in my own head.
Uh-huh.
But he tempered a lot of the stuff, especially in the last third of the movie, and he made it really, really kind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he found a kindness in that character that I guess always existed, but when I wrote it, I was in such a state that I was just furious with the world, and so I had always, you know.
This is back when you were writing for sitcoms and really
yeah,
angry.
Yeah. I would come home at 3 a.m. after having rewritten a script that, you know, a sitcom script, which totally did not need to be rewritten. And I would just be furious and exhausted. And I would sit down at the computer and just, you know, pound out American Beauty for an hour before I'd go to bed. But Kevin is an amazing actor, and people always ask me, did you have him in mind when I wrote this script? And actually, no, I didn't. I don't have actors in mind when I write because the characters themselves seem real enough to me. But when his name was mentioned, I was like, yeah, that's good. Get him. He'd be great. You know? And I can't imagine anyone else playing this role. It's like he was born to play it.
There's something slightly similar between your voice and his.
Well, people say that, and people also say that we look alike. Actually, my first day on the set, I drove onto the set, and the security guard said, Mr. Spacey, your trailer is over there. And I said, no, I'm the writer. And she went, oh, well, you have to park over there, like a mile away. And actually, some friend of mine came to the set when we were filming, and my friend Nancy said, it's freaky. It's so freaky. You guys are so much alike. I just have to take that as a huge compliment, you know.
My guest is Alan Ball. He wrote the screenplay for American Beauty. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Alan Ball, the screenwriter of American Beauty and the creator and executive producer of the sitcom Oh, Grow Up. Another question about American Beauty before we get to Oh, Grow Up. There's two fathers in American Beauty, Kevin Spacey and the father next door. Now, the father next door is an ex-Marine and into, like, strict discipline of his son and also very homophobic.
Right.
Which sets a lot of the story in motion. I know that you're gay. Does this, like, homophobic father reference come from someone in your family or just things that you've observed and know exist?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean I grew up in Marietta, and I grew up in the in Marietta, Georgia, and I grew up in the I came of age like in the early 70s before, you know, Will and Grace and stuff like that kind of right. stuff. And I grew up thinking I'm a freak. I'm a horrible. I'm evil. And there are certainly members of my family, not my immediate family, but members within my family who were viciously homophobic and just kind of aggressively bigoted.
What do they say to you?
Oh, well, that's just the thing. When I see them, like, once every 2 years at a family reunion, they smile blankly and they don't say anything. But I know behind my back they're saying I'm going to go to hell and that I'm, you know, whatever. I know those things are going on behind my back, but to my face they're very polite.
Well, let me ask you about your sitcom, Oh, Grow Up, which premiered in September. Tell us what the basic premise of of what brings the characters together here.
The basic premise is two guys who have known each other from college and who have lived together since college. They're kind of in their mid-30s, and so they sort of function as an old married couple, even though they're straight. And their third roommate is another college friend who just recently came out of the closet and left his wife. He was actually married. So it's a married gay guy living with two straight guys who are married to each other. And then one of the straight guys discovers that he has a teenage daughter he never knew about. And he's been sort of living the Casanova horn dog lifestyle for, you know, 20 years. This sort of like a big wake-up call for him. It's very loosely based on my own experience living in a brownstone in Brooklyn.
And who was living in that house?
Me, some friends from college, and a dog named Mom, just like there is in the sitcom.
When Ellen came out and the plot lines changed on her show, it was quite controversial. And now it seems like every new show has to have a gay character.
Yeah, I don't know that every show has to have a gay character. I mean, I thought it was interesting. I put a gay character in my show because I thought it was interesting to have straight men and gay men living together and it just not being an issue. Because when I was living in the house in Brooklyn with straight men, it just never was an issue. And I think that's, I just think that's interesting. And plus, if he hadn't been gay, it would just be another show about three dumb straight guys. And, you know, it's like, well, what guest star is what I'm going to date this week? But this just gave us more interesting territory and was sort of just more, I thought, more interesting to me as a writer. But I know what you're saying. It's like all of a sudden every show has a gay character.
I'm not accusing you of being a copycat. Don't get me wrong. but I'm wondering, did you get any objections from the network or the production company, or was it like, oh, of course there's going to be a gay character now, no problem?
Never from the production company and never from the network that we're on. I initially pitched to a different network, and they sort of went, well, does the gay character have to be gay? And I think they were saying that because they already had, shows with gay characters. And they felt like they had sort of filled that quota. They also said, does it have to be urban? Can we make it suburban? And on those two, you know, I basically went, yeah, it does have to be urban. And yeah, he does have to be gay. So we took it to another network.
And they accepted it?
Yeah. Yeah, there was never a moment's hesitation.
I saw an episode in your show in which the gay character, once realizing he's gay, goes to a gay bar and figures that now he has to figure out how to be gay because everyone around him is behaving differently than he's used to.
Right.
Did you go through that, figuring like now?
Oh, well, sure. I still do. I mean, I live in Hollywood, in West Hollywood. Everybody is like incredibly, you know, they're all these buff muscle boys, and they have, you know, they live this lifestyle that I'm certainly not judging and saying it's not valid, but I look at it and that is so not the life I want to lead. And I feel like there are probably a lot of gay and lesbian kids growing up in America, and they see that, oh my God, you have to be all worked out and you have to party every weekend and you have to, you know, this is what it means to be gay. And no, that's not what that's what it means to some people to be gay, but it's not the only way to be gay. And to kind of judge yourself if you don't live up to that standard, I think is kind of ridiculous. And if that's sort of what that's about, because I'm never going to be one of those West Hollywood circuit boys. And frankly, I don't want to be. But I think that is the image that a lot of America has of what gay men and what gay men are like and the kind of lives they lead. And no, it's not like that at all. And that's why Ford is, of the three guys in the show, the most conservative. And
Ford's the gay character.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, in a way, on every front, he's definitely the most conservative of the three characters.
Is being out in the business not a problem anymore?
Not if you're a writer.
Right, you're so behind the scenes. Who cares?
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
So unimportant. Who cares?
In a way, being a writer, being gay, has like a little added. It's like a little extra. You know what I mean? Because there's such a tradition of so many great gay writers.
Uh huh.
And there are a lot. You know, so it's not a problem for me being a writer. No.
Well, I wish you happy holidays.
Thank you. You too.
And thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. It was fun.
Alan Ball wrote the screenplay for American Beauty. It won the Best Movie of the Year award from the National Board of Review of Motion Pictures.